An important businessman had a problem with misplacing and losing his pen on a pretty frequent basis. Maybe you've had that problem too. As a result, he only bought cheap pens so that he didn't have to worry about if he lost one. Now, one day, an executive friend noticed that the cheap pens he was using. He asked why he had such crummy pens, especially since this man held a very important position within the company. When he heard that the businessman frequently lost them, his friend suggested taking a different strategy. Buy the costliest pen he could afford, and then see what happens. So he listened to his friend's advice, and he went out and bought himself a 14-karat gold Cross Classic pen, over $300. 6 months later, again, he saw his friend, and the friend said, "Are you still having a problem losing your pens?" He replied, "No, I haven't lost it even once." He found that he had become very careful with the Cross pen, and he was surprised that he seemed to have overcome that problem. His friend replied that it was the cost of the pen that made the difference. Because he attached such value to it, he took extra effort and care in handling it. So here's the question for us. Does this principle have a spiritual application in our lives? Are we careful with the things that we should value the most? Do we ever have a casual attitude towards what God commands? Are we ever careless, even a little bit, in how we obey? Or are we instead striving to be careful and diligent with every one of God's commands? So today, let's look at three examples from God's Word, situations that required careful attention to God's instructions. And we'll see that some who allowed themselves to fall into a very careless approach towards God's commands. And from these incidents, we can be warned and learn what can happen when someone takes God's words very lightly. Let's begin viewing what God said to his people when they were getting prepared to enter the promised land. So if you turn over to the book of Deuteronomy, and we're going to start in chapter 4. And here Moses is speaking to the people of Israel, repeating the advice that God had given initially over 40 years earlier when they had just left Egypt. Chapter 4, verse 5, "Surely I have taught you statutes and judgments just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the peoples who will hear all these statutes and say, 'Surely this is a great nation. It's wise and has wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there that has God so near to it as the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon him? And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are all in this law which I set before you this day?'" It's sad that the United States once was a great nation. I think in part because we did remember some of God's great laws. It's not the case nowadays. Verse 9, "Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and grandchildren. Therefore you shall be careful not to do as the Lord your God has commanded you. You shall not turn aside to the right hand or to the left. You shall walk in all the ways which the Lord your God has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which the Lord, which you shall possess." So as he'd done before, God emphasized to the people of Israel the need they had to carefully obey and to take heed to what they've heard and be diligent in keeping all of it. They've warned They were warned not to be careless in their approach towards God's ways. So here's the first example that we'll consider this morning, or this afternoon, I should say. It took place 2 years before this assembly. If you'll turn back two books to the book of Leviticus, we're going to read an episode in Leviticus in chapter 9, starting in chapter 9. And here Aaron and his sons are just beginning to fulfill the sacrificial offerings as explained by God. And we're going to break into the end of this very first sacrifice that took place. Leviticus 9 and verse 18. He also killed the bull and the ram as sacrifices of peace offerings, which were for the people. And Aaron's sons presented to him the blood, which he had sprinkled all around on the altar. Then Aaron lifted his hand toward the people, blessed them, and came down from offering the sin offerings, the burnt offerings, and the peace offerings. And Moses and Aaron went into the tabernacle of meetings and came out and blessed the people. Then the glory of the Lord appeared to all the people. And fire came out from before the Lord and consumed the burnt offerings and the fat on the altar. When all the people saw it, they shouted and fell on their face. So these offerings, there were various types. They represented the future sacrifice that God would eventually make through his son. And of course, the Israelites didn't grasp the meaning at that time. But Aaron and his sons and all of Israel recognized that these sacrifices were very important to God. He had spent several chapters, if you want to go back and look, explaining in detail how these sacrifices were to be handled. And here in verse 23 and verse 24, God clearly showed his acceptance of those first offerings that were made. The people saw God's glory and they witnessed fire come down from heaven. They knew that God was highly involved. So now let's move over to chapter 10. Now you may remember that only Aaron's family was permitted to perform these most important duties inside the tabernacle area. God had shown them in great detail, again, what was required for each of these sacrifices, including the handling of incense. So let's start reading in chapter 10 and verse 1. Then Nadab and Abihu, the sons of Aaron, each took his censer and put fire in it, put incense on it, and offered profane fire before the Lord, which he had not commanded them. Now what these two men offered was described here by God as profane. Other translations use the term unauthorized fire, strange, or unholy fire. Verse 2. So fire went out from the Lord and devoured them, the two sons, and they died before the Lord. So what just happened here? Why were these two sons of Aaron, and these are his two oldest sons, why were they supernaturally burned to death? That's not fully explained, but clearly the fire that they used did not come from the burning coals that were on the altar as they had been commanded. And as a result, God took very drastic actions for their carelessness. Notice what the UCG Bible commentary says about the actions that they took. What Aaron's sons did was not in ignorance, for God had already given clear instructions through Moses on how he was to be regarded. So in this situation, Nadab and Abihu disregarded and exercised carelessness, and it could not go uncorrected. It was not only offensive to God, but it would have fostered a careless attitude about God's instructions among the people. Verse 3. And Moses said to Aaron, "This is what the Lord spoke, saying, by those who come near me, I must be regarded as holy, and before all the people, I must be glorified." So Aaron held his peace. Then Aaron called Mishael and Elzaphan, the sons of Uziel, the uncle of Aaron, and said to them, "Come near, carry your brethren from before the sanctuary out of the camp." So they went near and carried them by their tunics out of the camp, as Moses had said. So to finish this episode, let's go down to verse 9. Here God adds a little bit further instructions to Aaron about what had just happened. Leviticus 10, verse 9, he says, "Do not drink wine or intoxicating drink, you nor your sons with you, when you go into the tabernacle of meeting, lest you die. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations, that you may distinguish between the holy and the unholy, and between the clean and unclean." So here we have two eldest sons of Aaron, God's very high priest, but his position and their importance did not excuse the handling of God's instructions in a lackadaisical manner. And God quickly drove home his expectation that all the people must be careful to follow God's laws and his instructions. And these two important leaders, Aaron's eldest sons, had not done that. God didn't accept their actions or their attitudes. A deep respect for God's word was expected of everyone, especially the leaders of Israel. So we all need to ask ourselves, what is our attitude when God shows us in his word what he expects? Okay, let's look at a second incident that makes the same point. Turn forward, to the book of 1 Kings in chapter 12. 1 Kings chapter 12, and we're going to break into the story about Jeroboam. You may remember that God selected Jeroboam to be the leader of the northern ten tribes, when he took away part of the kingdom from Solomon's son, who was Rehoboam. Rehoboam was allowed to only keep Judah, and there was part of Benjamin that was there too. So let's start reading in 1 Kings chapter 12 and verse 26. And Jeroboam, again, he's now the leader of the ten tribes in the north, said in his heart, "Now the kingdom may return to the house of David." So he's worried that even though God has given him this kingdom, that people might want to go back. And this first section we will read here is going to serve as a background to another individual that we'll see soon. But we need to cover this to kind of give us a background. So continuing in verse 27, Jeroboam says, "If these people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn back to their Lord, Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and go back to Rehoboam, king of Judah." Therefore the king asked advice. He made two calves of gold and said to the people, "It is too much for you to go to the Jerusalem. Here are your gods, O Israel, which brought you up from the land of Egypt." And he set one up in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. So essentially Jeroboam is arguing that it's just going to be too far if all you people now in the northern tribes have to go all the way down to Jerusalem to keep God's holy days. But in reality, he was really concerned about that his subjects, these people of the northern ten tribes, might want to keep attending God's feast in Jerusalem. And if they did, they might also want to go back and continue to be part of a united kingdom with Israel and Judah together. So Jeroboam came up with a plan. He set up pagan gods for them to worship in areas that were much closer to home. Verse 30. "Now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan. He made shrines on the high places and made priests from every class of people who were not the sons of Levi. Jeroboam ordained a feast on the 15th day of the 8th month, like the feast that was in Judah, and he offered sacrifices on the altar. So he did at Bethel, sacrificing to the calves that he had made. And at Bethel he installed the priests of the high places which he had made. So he made offerings on the altar which he had made at Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, in the month in which he had devised in his own heart." He had come up with this himself. "And he ordained a feast for the children of Israel and offered sacrifices on the altar and burned incense." So Jeroboam set up his own feast days, doing away with God's true feast. Now, it's somewhat ironic that after the leadership of the Worldwide Church of God departed from God's ways back in the mid-1990s, that they also tried to change dates. They set a feast in the eighth month, that was August, but they were hoping to do away with the Feast of Tabernacles, which some of the people even then were still keeping. But interestingly enough, almost no one came to that contrived feast that they set up in August. So with this as the background, we'll see that God was not pleased with Jeroboam's disobedience. Chapter 13, verse 1. And behold, a man of God went from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Lord, and Jeroboam stood by the altar to burn incense. Then he cried out against the altar by the word of the Lord, that's this man that was sent, and said, O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a child, Josiah by name, shall be born to the house of David, and on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and men's bones shall be burned on you. And you recognize that Josiah was a future king of Judah. And he gave a sign that same day, saying, this is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Surely the altar shall split apart, and the ashes on it shall be poured out. So that's the sign that God is going to give to King Jeroboam, that he's not happy with what he's done. So it came to pass when King Jeroboam heard the saying of the son of the man of God, who cried out against the altar in Bethel, that he stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, arrest him. Then his hand, which he stretched out towards him, withered, so that he could not pull it back to himself. The altar also split apart, and the ashes poured out from the altar, according to the sign which the son of God, which the man of God, had given by the word of the Lord. And we don't see the name of this prophet who was sent by God, but this man obviously was a true prophet, and he was sent to warn Jeroboam of God's anger, and these signs he's just accomplished. Verse 6, then the king answered and said to the man of God, please entreat the favor of the Lord your God, and pray for me, that my hand may be restored. So the man of God entreated the Lord, and the king's hand was restored to him, and became as before. Then the king said to the man of God, come home with me and refresh yourself, and I will give you a reward. But the man of God said to the king, if you were to give me half your house, I would not go in with you, nor would I eat bread nor drink water in this place. And now he's going to tell us why. Verse 9, for so it was commanded me by the word of the Lord, saying, you shall not eat bread nor drink water, nor return by the same way you came. So God had sent this prophet out to Jeroboam with a specific message, but he also gave him some strict instructions that the prophet was personally to follow as well. And that was, don't eat or drink or go back by the same route. Now, he was careful to obey God when Jeroboam invited him to a meal, but did he continue to treat God's words and instructions carefully? Let's see. Verse 10. So he went another way and did not return by the way he came to Bethel. So that's what God told him to do. Verse 11, now an old prophet dwelt in Bethel, and his sons came and told him all the works that this man of God had done that day in Bethel. They also told their father the words that he had spoken to the king. Now notice, this old man is called a prophet, but he's not called a man of God or God's prophet, like the first man who was referred to. Verse 12, and their father said to them, which way did he go? For his sons had seen which way the man of God who came from Judah had gone. Then he said to his sons, saddle the donkey for me. So they saddled the donkey for him, and he rode on it. And he went after the man of God and found him sitting under an oak tree. And he said to them, are you the man of God who came from Judah? And he answered, I am. Then he said to him, come home with me and eat bread. And the prophet said, I cannot return with you, nor go in with you. Neither can I eat bread nor drink water with you in this place. For I have been told by the word of the Lord, you shall not eat bread nor drink water there, nor return by going the way you came. So far, so good. He's being very careful to obey God. But now this story takes a somewhat of a strange turn. This other man, who calls himself a prophet, goes on. Verse 18. He said to him, I too am a prophet, as you are. And the angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you to your house, that he may eat bread and drink water. So was this old man lying to him? Was this man a false prophet? So having heard these words, the true prophet apparently now lets his guard down. Verse 19. So he went back with them and ate bread in his house and drank water. Now it happened as they sat at the table that the word of the Lord came to the prophet who had brought him back. So God is now talking to this other man, this second man who calls himself a prophet. And he cried out to the man of God who came from Judah, saying, "Thus says the Lord, because you have disobeyed the word of the Lord and have not kept the commandment which the Lord your God commanded you, but you came back and ate bread and drank water in the place which the Lord said to you, 'Eat no bread and drink no water,' your corpse shall not come to the tomb of your father." So the welcoming words that this old man had given caused him to become careless. The words that this man spoke sounded believable. But nevertheless, God had been crystal clear in the instructions that he originally had given him. And finally, God really does speak through this false prophet. So it was, verse 23, after he had eaten bread and after he had drunk, that he saddled the donkey for him. This prophet's very nice. He saddles the donkey, and the prophet for the prophet whom he had brought back. Now, when he had gone, now speaking of the true prophet, a lion met him on the road and killed him, and his corpse was thrown on the road, and the donkey stood by it. The lion also stood by the corpse. And there men passed by and saw the corpse thrown on the road and the lion standing by the corpse. Then they went and told it in the city where the old prophet dwelt. And when the old prophet who had brought him back from the way heard it, he said, "Is the man of God who was disobedient to the word of the Lord? Therefore the Lord has delivered him to the lion, which has torn him and killed him according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to him." So there's some really heavy irony that's going on in this account. The true prophet from Judah sent by God listened to a man who was a false prophet. Had this old man ever been a true prophet of God in his life? Well, we don't know. Probably not. If he had, he would have been more respectful when he heard about the instructions that this man of God had been given. But either way, the man sent by God received clear instructions from God as to what he was to do. He should have feared to deviate from those instructions for anyone. He was careless. As was the case with Aaron's two sons, it cost him his life. So we've seen many who were once in God's church in past decades who've made the same mistake. They listened to men who seemed to be God's servants, but taught doctrines that were opposed to what God says in his word. So now we have two instances here in which men of God, all leaders, suffered the ultimate penalty of death and became examples for us in mishandling God's instructions, handling it in a careless manner. And let's look at one more example when God's instructions were not taken seriously. And this one is probably more familiar. Turn over to 1 Chronicles chapter 13. 1 Chronicles 13. I'm going to read from the New Living Translation. Now, as background, the Ark of the Covenant, which represents God's very throne, had been away from the tabernacle for a number of years. Saul took it into his final battle with the Philistines, and it fell into their hands when Israel was defeated. And since that time, it's been residing at the house of a man named Abinadab. But David recognized that it should rightly be with God's tabernacle. So let's read about David's plans to make things right. 1 Chronicles 13, verse 1. David consulted all his officials, including the generals and the captains of the army. Then he addressed the entire assembly of Israel as follows. "If you approve, and if it is the will of our Lord, the Lord our God, let us send messages to all the Israelites throughout the land, including the priests and the Levites in their towns and pasture lands. Let us invite them to come and join us. It is time to bring back the ark of our God, for we neglected it during the reign of Saul." The whole assembly agreed to do this, for the people could see that it was the right thing to do. Verse 6. Then David and all Israel went to Bala of Judah, also called Kiriath-Jearim, to bring back the Ark of God, which bears the name of the Lord, who is enthroned before the cherubim. Now notice that he consulted the officials and the general and the army, and last of all, the whole assembly of Israel. He said, if it was God's will, but we'll see that he doesn't carefully find out exactly what God's will is. Verse 7. They placed the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it from Abinadab's house. Uzzah and Ahio were guiding the cart. These two men were the sons of Abinadab. And they put it on an ox-drawn cart. Now, you may recall at one point in the past that the Philistines had ended up with the ark, and they returned it to Israel by placing it on a cart. But was that the correct method that God had given to handle the ark? Verse 9. But when they arrived, the ark on the cart, at the threshing floor of Nacon, the oxen stumbled, and Uzzah reached out his hand to steady the ark. Now, perhaps the oxen had seen some grain, perhaps, on the ground. After all, this had been a threshing floor. But whatever the reason that they turned aside, a situation like that was certainly something that they could have foreseen. Verse 10, then the Lord's anger was aroused against Uzzah, and he struck him dead because he laid his hands on the ark. So Uzzah died there in the presence of God. So on the surface, it only seems reasonable that he take some action to steady the ark. But here, as in those other incidents that we just looked at, there are some other factors that are in play. And we'll look at these a little bit more closely in a moment. Verse 11. David was angry because the Lord's anger had burst out against Uzzah. He named that place Perez Uzzah, which means to burst out against Uzzah, as it is still called today. David was now afraid of God, and he asked, how can I ever bring the Ark of God back into my care? So David did not move the Ark into the city of David. Instead, he took it to the house of Obed-Edom of Gath. The Ark of God remained there in Obed-Edom's house for 3 months. And the Lord blessed the household of Obed-Edom and everything that he owned. So basically, David is back to square one with the Ark. It's not where it should be. But once again, it's at the home of an Israelite man. What happened during the transport that has led David to being angry with God? Did he have a right to be angry? Well, over the next few weeks or months, David must have given quite a bit of thought to what had happened in the incident with Uzzah. Perhaps he finally sought out God's help, as he should have to begin with, and maybe he consulted the priest, who knew exactly what God had commanded regarding how to handle the ark. So let's go forward now to chapter 15. First Chronicles 15, we'll start reading in verse 1. Now David built several buildings for himself in the city of David. He also prepared a place for the ark of God and set up a special tent for it. No one except the Levites may carry the Ark of God. The Lord has chosen them to carry the Ark of the Lord and to serve him forever. So now we see that David has apparently learned what he should have known before. In the books of Exodus and in Numbers, God had given some very detailed commands about how to transport the Ark. Only the sons of a Levite family named Kohath had been selected by God to move the ark. And when they did, no one was permitted to touch it. They had special poles that had to be inserted into gold rings that were on the corner of the ark. And they carried it on these poles on their shoulders. Verse 3. Then David summoned all of Israel to Jerusalem to bring the ark of the Lord to the place that he had prepared for it. He said to them, "You are the leaders of the Levite families. You must purify yourself and all your fellow Levites so you can bring the Ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, to the place I have prepared for it. Because you Levites did not carry the Ark the first time, the anger of the Lord our God burst out against us. We failed to ask God how to properly move it. So the priests and the Levites purified themselves in order to bring the Ark of the Lord, the God of Israel, to Jerusalem. Then the Levites carried the Ark of God on their shoulders with its carrying poles, just as the Lord had instructed Moses. Then David and the elders of Israel and the generals of the army went to the house of Obed-Edom to bring the Ark of the Lord's covenant up to Jerusalem with a very great celebration. And because God was clearly helping the Levites as they carried the Ark of the Covenant, they sacrificed 7 bulls and 7 rams. Verse 28, so all Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord's Covenant with shouts of joy, the blowing of ram's horns and trumpets, the crashing of cymbals, and loud playing on harps and lyres. So lesson learned. Had David merely read God's instructions carefully before his first attempt to move the ark, a tragedy could have been averted. And again, we see that God means exactly what he says when he gives commands and instructions. So as I come to the end of this message, we've seen 3 examples that all make the very important part that none of us can take lightly any of God's commands. Do we always approach his commands as being of the highest importance to us? Or do we sometimes judge that perhaps some of God's instructions are of lesser importance and maybe even trivial? Do we occasionally let our guard down, possibly fudging in a few areas that we decide are really not that important? Notice what Christ said in Luke 16, verse 10. Luke 16, 10, he says, he who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. And very similarly, at the end of the parable of the minas, just a couple chapters forward in Luke, it's in Luke 19, verse 7, he makes the same point about his followers who carefully handle little things. In Luke 19, verse 17, he says, and he said to him, well done, good servant, because you were faithful in very little. Have authority over 10 cities. So I'm going to conclude this message by reading again Deuteronomy 4, verse 6. We read that at the beginning of this message. Deuteronomy 4, verse 6. He says, therefore be careful to observe them, speaking of God's laws and his commands, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of these peoples, who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people.